Osho, Bigyan Bhairav Tantra, Volume 2, The Book of the Secrets, A New Commentary, Discourse Number 8, given in Bombay, India.
You said last night that a Krishna, a Christ, a Buddha, they are the climax of human possibilities and growth. And then you said that the yoga and tantra psychology puts no ideal before man, and that to have an ideal is a mistake according to tantra. In this reference, please explain what is the difference between an inspiration and an ideal. What is the difference and significance of inspiration in a seeker's life? And tell whether even being inspired by a great man is a mistake on the part of a meditator. A Buddha, a Krishna or a Christ, they are not ideals for you. You are not to follow them. If you follow them, you will miss them. And your own Buddhahood will never be achieved. Buddhahood is the ideal, not the Buddha. Jesus is not the ideal, but the Christ. Buddhahood is different from Gautam Buddha. Christhood is different from Jesus. Jesus is only one of the Christ. You can become a Christ, but you can never become a Jesus. You can become a Buddha, but you can never become Gautam. Gautam became Buddha. You can become a Buddha. Buddhahood is a quality. It is an experience. Of course, when Gautam becomes a Buddha, Gautam has its own individuality. You have your own individuality. When you will become a Buddha, these two Buddhas will not be the same. The innermost experience will be the same, but the expression will be different, absolutely different. No comparison is possible. Only at the innermost core you will be the same. And why? Because at the innermost core there is no individuality. On the periphery is the individual. The deeper you move, the individual dissolves. On the innermost core you are as if no one. On the innermost core you are just a deep void, a nothingness, a sunya, a zero. And because of this nothingness, there is no difference, because two nothings cannot be different. But two somethings are bound to be different. Two somethings can never be the same, and two nothings can never be different. When one becomes just absolutely nothing, a zero point, that is similar in a Jesus, in a Krishna, in a Buddha. When you will reach to the ultimate, you will reach to this sunya, this nothingness. But your personality, your expression of that ecstasy is bound to be different. A mirror will dance. A Buddha can never dance. Impossible to conceive Buddha dancing. Looks absurd. But mirror sitting under a bodhi like a Buddha looks also absurd. She will lose everything. She will not be a mirror at all. She will be imitation. The real mirror can be conceived only as dancing in ecstasy, in her own love madness. That is her expression. The innermost core is the same. Buddha sitting under the bodhi tree and mirror dancing in mad ecstasy, the innermost core is the same. In the dancing mirror and in the sitting, silently sitting Buddha, just like an statue, the innermost core is the same, but the periphery is different. The dance and sitting silent is just on the periphery. If you move within mirror, the deeper you go, the dance will cease. The mirror will cease. If you go deep in Buddha, the sitting will cease. The Buddha will cease as an individual. You can become a Buddha, but you can never become a Gautam Buddha. That's what is meant. Don't make them your ideals, otherwise you will start imitating them. And what can you do if you imitate? You can force something from out upon yourself. That will be a fake phenomenon. You will become pseudo, just painted. You will look Buddha-like more than Buddha. You can look, but that will be just a look, an appearance. Deep down, you will remain the same. And this will create a duality, a conflict, an inner anguish, and you will be in suffering. You can be in bliss only when authentically you are yourself. You can never feel any happiness when you are acting as someone else. So remember Tantra message. You are the ideal. You are not to imitate anyone. You are to discover yourself. Looking at a Buddha, no need to imitate him. Looking at a Buddha, this possibility hits deep in you that something of the beyond can happen. Buddha is just a symbol that something has happened to this man. And if it can happen to this man, it can happen to every man. Then the whole possibility of humanity is revealed in a Jesus, in a Mira, in a Chaitanya. Just the possibility is revealed. The future is revealed. You need not be whatsoever you are. Something more is possible. So Buddha is just a symbol of the future. Don't imitate him. Rather, let his life, his being, his phenomena happening become a new thirst in you. That's all. You must not be content with yourself as you are right now. Let Buddha become a discontent in you. A thirst to transcend, to go beyond, to move into the unknown. When you reach to the peak of your own being, you will know what happened to Buddha under the Bodh tree, or what happened to Jesus on the cross, or what was happening in Meera when she was dancing in the streets. You will know. But your own expression will be your own. You are not going to be a Meera or a Buddha or a Jesus. You are going to be yourself. And you have never been before. You are unique. So nothing can be said. You are not predictable. What will happen? How you will manifest it? Whether you will sing, dance, paint, or remain silent, and no one can say anything. And this is good, that nothing can be said, nothing can be predicted. That is the beauty. If it is predictable that you will be like this, you become a mechanical thing. Predictions are possible only about mechanical devices. Human consciousness is unpredictable. That is its freedom. So when Tantra says don't follow ideals, it doesn't mean that deny the Buddha. No, it is not a denial. Really, it is how you can find your own Buddhahood. Following another, you will miss it. Following your own path, you can gain it, you can achieve it. Someone asked a Zen master, Bokoju, that your master, Bokoju's master, was a very famous man, a very great man. So someone asked, are you following your master really? Bokoju said, yes, I am following him. But the man who asked the question was disturbed, because it was well known all over the country that Bokoju is not following his master at all. So the man says, are you trying to deceive me? Everyone knows, and you are also aware, that you are not following your master at all. And still you say that you are following? What do you mean? So Bokoju said, I am following my master because my master never followed his master. This is what I have learned from him. He was himself. This is how a Buddha, a Jesus is to be followed. And this is how. They are unique. If you are really following them, you must be unique. Buddha never followed anyone. And he achieved enlightenment only in that moment when he had stopped completely following, when he became himself, when he left all paths, all teachings, all doctrines, then he could achieve. If you follow him, you are not following him. It is not paradoxical, it only looks. If you follow him as a dead routine, imitate him, you are not following him. He never followed anyone. And then only he could become the peak. Understand him. Don't follow him. And then a subtle following will happen. And that is inner, not imitation. In Nietzsche's great work, Thus Spake Zarathustra, the last message of Zarathustra to his disciples is, beware of me. Now I have told everything that was to be told to you. Now beware of me. Don't follow me. Just forget me and leave me and go away. This is the last message of all the great masters. No great master would like to make you puppets, because he is killing you then. He is a murderer. He would help you to be yourself. And if you cannot be yourself in the intimacy, in communication with your master, then where you will be? The master means an opportunity for you to be yourself. Only small minds, narrow minds, who pretend to be masters and are not masters, will try to impose themselves upon you. Great masters will help you to grow in your own path. And great masters will create every barrier so that you don't become a victim of following. They will create every barrier. They will not allow you, because your tendency will be to follow. It is easy. Imitation is easy. To be authentic is arduous. And when you imitate, you don't feel responsible for it. The master is responsible. No great master has ever allowed anyone to imitate. He will create every hindrance so that you cannot imitate him. He will throw you by every means to yourself. I am reminded of one Chinese saint was celebrating his master's birthday, Enlightenment Day. Many followers has come. They asked, but we never heard that this man was your master. We never knew that you belonged to this man. That old man was dead. Only just today we came to hear and know that you are celebrating your master's Enlightenment Day. So this man was your master. But how? We never saw you with him. So the man replied, I had been with him, but he refused. He refused to become my master. Because of his refusal, I could become myself. And now whatsoever I am is because of his refusal. I am his disciple. He could have accepted me. Then I would have thrown all responsibility on his soldiers. But he refused me. And he was the last man. And there was no comparison. And when he refused, I couldn't go to anyone else. Because he was the only shelter. And if he has refused, then there is no meaning, no purpose. I left going to anyone. He was the last. If he had accepted me, I would have forgotten myself. But he refused, and refused very rudely. And the refusal became a shock and a challenge. And I decided, now I will not go to anyone. If this man has refused, then there is no one worth going. And then I started working on my own. And only then, by and by, I realized why he has refused. He has thrown myself to me. And then only I knew that he has accepted me. Otherwise, why he should refuse? This looks contradictory. But this is how deeper dynamism of consciousness works. Masters are mysterious. You cannot judge them. You cannot be sure what they are doing. Unless the whole thing happens, and only retrospectively you will be able to know what they were doing. Now, it is impossible. On the middle path, you cannot judge what is happening, what is being done. But one thing is certain, imitation cannot be allowed. Inspiration is a different thing. Through inspiration, you start on the journey, not on any effort of copying. You move on your own path. Inspiration is just a challenge. A thirst has arisen. Now you will move. Tantra says, be inspired, but don't become imitators. Always remember that you are your own goal. No one else can be. And unless you achieve that point where you can say, I have achieved my destiny, now I am fulfilled, don't stop before that. Go on transcending. Go on being in discontent. Go on moving. And if you don't make any ideal, then you can be enriched by everyone. The moment you get obsessed with an ideal, you are closed. If you get obsessed with Buddha, then Jesus is not for you. Then Muhammad, how Muhammad can be for you? Then you are obsessed with an ideal. Then you are trying to copy it. Then all the contraries, all the different ones are inimical in your mind. How a follower of Mahavir can conceive to be open to Muhammad? Impossible. Totally different. Not only different, contraries. They look polar opposites. So if you put both in your mind, you will be in a deep conflict. You cannot put. That's why followers are always enemies of others' followers. They create enmity in the world. A Hindu cannot conceive that Muhammad can be enlightened. A Mohammedan cannot conceive that Mahavir can be enlightened. A follower of Krishna cannot conceive that Jesus is enlightened. Looks so sad. Krishna looks so blissful. How a blissful state? Krishna's bliss, Jesus' sadness, total opposite poles. Jesus' follower cannot conceive Krishna to be enlightened. Because so much misery in the world, and he is playing on his flute, looks too much selfish. And the whole world is suffering, and he goes on dancing with his gopis. A follower of Jesus will think this profane. But as a follower, a Jesus and a Buddha and a Krishna can exist together without any problem, without any conflict. Rather, they will enjoy each other very much. But followers, why this is so? And this will be so because there is a deep psychological reason. The follower is not concerned with Muhammad or Mahavir, he is concerned with himself. If he thinks both are good, then he will be in difficulty. Then whom to follow and what to do? Because Muhammad is with his sword in his hand. And Mahavir says that even to kill an insect and for lives you will suffer. And this Muhammad is with his sword. So what to do? Muhammad goes to war. And Mahavir escapes from life completely. He escapes so much that he is afraid even to breathe. Because while you breathe, many lives, many mini lives are killed through it. He is afraid to breathe, and Muhammad goes to war. So how a follower of either can make accommodation for the opposite? Then his heart will be divided and he will be in constant conflict. To avoid this, he says, everyone else is wrong, only this is right. This is his problem. But this is created because he is trying to imitate. There is no need. If you are not an imitator, then you can taste the water of many rivers and many wells. And there is no problem if the taste differs, rather it is beautiful. You are enriched by it. Then you are open to Muhammad and Mahavir and Christ and Zarathustra and everyone. They all inspire you towards yourself. They are not ideals. They all help you to be yourself. They are not pointing towards themselves, they are pointing towards you in different ways, in different methods. They are pointing to one goal, and that is you. Lara Huxley has written a book. The name of the book, You Are Not the Target. But I tell you, you are the target. Of all these, of Buddha, of Mahavir, of Krishna, of Christ, they all indicate towards you are the target. You are the goal. Through you, life is striving to achieve a unique peak. Be happy about it. Be grateful about it. Life is trying to achieve a unique goal through you. And that goal can be achieved only through you. No one else can achieve it. You are meant for it. You are destined for it. So don't waste time following others. But that doesn't mean that don't get inspired. Really, if you are not following anyone, you can get easily inspired. If you are following, you have become dead. You will not get inspired. Inspiration is an openness. Following is being closed. Second question, you spoke of Western psychology being rooted in Freudian concepts of pathology and Eastern psychology using the supernormal as the base from which to evaluate man. But as I look around me in the modern world, I see that most people fit Freud's categories of pathology. One in a million fit the category of supernormal, and a small number actually fit the societal ideal of normal. Why is there so much pathology nowadays? And what would you consider to be the definition of normal? Many things will have to be understood. It is not so. It is not that very few are there who achieve their peaks. Many are there, but you don't have eyes to see them. Whenever you look around you, you see that which you can see. How can you see that which you cannot see? Your capacity to see determines many things. You hear that which you can hear, not that which is there. If a Buddha passes, you may not be able to recognize. And you were there when Buddha passed, really, and you missed him. You were there. You were there when Jesus was alive, but you crucified him. Difficult to see, because you see in your own ways. You have concepts, you have categories, you have attitudes. Through them you look at them. Jesus looked to you like a criminal. When Jesus was crucified, he was crucified with two other criminals. On each side was a thief. Three persons were crucified together. And Jesus was just between two thieves. And not why? He was considered to be one somehow immoral criminal. And you were there to judge. Even if Jesus comes right now, you will judge again in the same way, because your judgment, your criterion has not changed. Jesus lived, stayed with everyone and anyone. He stayed in a prostitute's house. The whole village went against him. But his values were different. The prostitute came, washed his feet with her tears, and said, "I am guilty, I am a sinner, and you are my only hope. If you come to my home, I will be relieved of my guilt. I will become alive again. If Jesus can come to my house, then I am accepted." So Jesus went. He stayed there, but the whole town went against him. What type of man is he? Is staying with a prostitute? But for Jesus, love is the value. And no one has given such a loving invitation ever. He couldn't say no. And if Jesus had said no, he was not an enlightened man. Then he was just seeking after social respectability. He was not seeking after respectability. In another village, the whole town came to Jesus with a woman who had sinned. And in the Old Testament it is written that when someone sins, she should be stoned to death. It is not he should be, it is she should be stoned to death. Because only women sin. Men never sins. Because all these scriptures are written by men. And this is a grave problem. So they asked Jesus. And they were playing a trick. Because if Jesus says no, don't kill this woman, don't ye be the judges, then they will say, then you are against the scripture. And if Jesus says, yes, kill this woman, stone her to death, then we'll say, where has gone your message, love the enemy? And where has gone your message, judge ye not, that he should not be judged? So they were playing a trick. They were creating a dilemma, a logical dilemma. Whatsoever Jesus says, he will be trapped. But you cannot trap an enlightened man. It is impossible. It is impossible. And the more you try to trap him, you will get trapped with him. So Jesus says, the scripture is absolutely correct. But come forward only those who have never sinned. Take the stones in your hands, murder this woman to death. But only those who have never sinned. The crowd started disappearing. Those who were standing in front went back. Because who will stone this woman? But they became enemies of Jesus. And when I say they, I mean you. You have always been here. You cannot recognize. You cannot see. You are blind. That's why you always feel the world is bad. There is no enlightened man. Everyone is pathological. It is not so. But you can see only pathology because you are pathological. You can understand illness because you are ill. You cannot understand health because you have never been healthy. So the language of health simply escapes you. I have heard about one Jew mystic, Balsam. Someone came and asked Balsam, which is more significant? What is more valuable, wealth or wisdom? The man was asking this question for a reason. So Balsam laughed and he said, of course, wisdom is more significant, more valuable. Then the man said, then Balsam, the second question, I always see you, the wise man, waiting on the wealthy. You always go to rich persons' houses. And I have never seen any wealthy man waiting on you, the wise one. And you say, wisdom is more valuable than wealth. Then explain me this phenomenon. The Valsam laughed and said, yes. Wise men go to the wealthy ones because they are wise and they know the value of wealth. And wealthy are just wealthy, simply wealthy, nothing else, and they cannot understand the value of wisdom. Of course I go because I understand the value of wealth. And those poor idiots, they are just wealthy, nothing else. They cannot understand the value of wisdom, so they never come to me. If you see a saint going to a palace, you will say, okay, this man is not a saint. Finished. Because you look through your own eyes. Wealth to you has a meaning. You can follow only a saint who renounces wealth because you are wealth obsessed. You look through you. And whatsoever you say is more about you than about anyone else. It is always about you. You are the referent. When you say Buddha is not enlightened, you don't mean that. You simply say, for me, he doesn't look enlightened. But who are you? And does his enlightenment depend in any way on your attitude, your approach, your standpoint? You have fixed categories of thought and you go on using them. To you, pathology is recognizable. Enlightenment is not. And you cannot understand that which is higher than you. Remember, you can understand only that which is lower than you. Or at the most on the same level. You cannot understand the higher, that is impossible. To understand the higher, you will have to move higher. You can understand the lower. Look at it in this way. A madman cannot understand you. Impossible for a madman to understand you. He looks through his madness. But you can understand a madman. He is lower than you. The normal human being can understand abnormals who have gone below, pathological. He can understand higher ones. Even a fright is afraid. Jung has written in his memoirs that once it happened to him that he wanted to analyze Freud's dreams. He was one of his greatest disciples. And they were traveling to United States on a ship. So many days they were together. And one day, Jung gathered courage. He was the most intimate in those days. And he asked Freud, I would like to analyze your dreams. So just tell me any dream. And for many, many days we will be together, so I will analyze. So what Freud said, what do you mean? If you analyze my dreams, I will lose my authority. I cannot tell you my dreams.